Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:52 PM in the Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 21st. There was a lot of news this morning out of Turkey, where the central bank chief was ousted, and that is just another reflection of just how volatile Turkey can be. The lira spiked lower, but then recouped the majority of its decline by the end of the day. So there was certainly a knock-on effect in Europe, where there are a number of the Spanish banks are heavily weighted in their exposure to some of the Turkish banks. So the IBEX index was down about 2% because of BBVA, and BBVA was the leading decliner, and it has clearly broken the very short-term upward bias. So we're certainly looking like there's potential for an additional reversion back to the mean. I should put that back in local currencies. But then when we look at the performance of the Turkish market, well, it was down heavily and closed on the low of the day. But with the currency starting to firm up somewhat, then that may favor it tomorrow. But it's unwinding the overbought condition. What I think, though, is particularly relevant is to look at what it looks like on a constant currency basis, because it completely reverses the trend. And it's now right in the region of its trend mean. So there is obviously scope here that we may see some pause and consolidation. But of course, that is going to have to be followed with some sort of conciliatory statement from the Turkish government to say that they are willing to deal, or that they're willing to try and support their economy in a more conventional manner. And it does look like the bond markets are willing to take that as a possibility, because bond yields in Turkey are really not as high as one might imagine. They've benefited from the low interest rate environment all over the world in much the same way as anyone else has. So if we look at, say, the 10-year US dollar bond, it's currently yielding about 7%. And there's certainly been an uptrend to the yield of late, but it was only at 6% prior to this announcement. So yes, it bounced and cleared almost 100 basis points in a day, but this is still not really implying a categorical risk. Rather, that this is a high-yield market in classic terms. But of course, we've had massive compression in yields right across the high-yield space. And we also saw that high-yield debt bounced in here today from the region of the trend mean. And 10-year treasuries are looking like they're losing, the futures are losing downside momentum. We had the really quite impressive acceleration lower towards the end of February, and since then there's been a loss of downward momentum, and it was a little bit steadier in here today. If it can sustain a move above 133 and break the sequence of lower rally highs, well, then that will increase the potential that we are looking at a reversion back towards the mean. And whenever we see even a modicum of a chance that there might be some support for bond prices, then we see growth starting to recover. So the Nasdaq was up over 2% in here today, and it's cleared back above the 13,000 level. So this is at least confirming near-term support, and it's a higher reaction low in the short term, and it would really need to take out the low put in on Friday in order to confirm that we're back in a supply-dominated environment. And this was also a good day for companies like Amazon and Nvidia, which had been teetering on the edge of breaking downwards 2 days ago, but have rebounded in reasonably emphatic fashion. Nvidia has done probably better than Amazon has, and it is now back above its trend mean and holding that $500 level. And the semiconductors index has also rebounded. Now, of course, there is a shortage of semiconductors globally, so it does represent a tailwind for the sector overall, but the share price and the trend do suggest that a lot of that good news has already been priced in. It really is then down to just when we start to see bond buyers coming back in to buy the dip, because 1.7% is attractive against a background of zero interest rates. The challenge has been that investors have been unwilling to give the benefit of the doubt to the Fed or to take them at their word that they're not going to raise rates. And the 10-year, 2-year spread, or the yield curve spread, is now at 153 basis points. So it was up to about 100 and almost 160 last week. So it's still trending higher, and it would really need a substantial pullback in order to really question that this isn't still a I think a clear trend of appreciation. We're definitely seeing that there has been interest in banks and anything that would benefit from curve steepening over the course of the last few months. Generally speaking, though, the yield curve doesn't steepen much beyond about 250 basis points, and we're at 153 right now. So there is, we can definitely conclude that about half of the steepening has already occurred. And then it would be a bigger question, would be how long will that steepness remain in place? So when we then just translate that back into plain English, when will the Federal Reserve eventually, in fact, raise interest rates? It's unlikely to be in 2021. Might not even be in 2022. They definitely want to see inflation, but they're probably going to have to wait at least a few quarters, if not a year or more, before they can draw a conclusion that could have data to stand behind it that would make any sense. And that's particularly true as we move through 2021, where year-over-year comparisons are going to be all over the place. Then, when we think about the S&P 500, well, it also bounced in here today. This is still holding its higher reaction lows, and there is still the potential for additional upside if we see bond yields continuing to contract. We haven't had a really big dynamic move just yet, and we certainly haven't had any mention of activity to support the market from the Federal Reserve. Gold prices were in negative territory today, although well off the lows, and we still continue to see some steadying around this 1700 point level. Well, we can think that it's bounced from 100 by about $100 at each one of these $100 increments. It bounced at 900, bounced at 1800, it's bouncing from 1700. So it's still a reasonably consistent trend, although that trend is downwards. It's going to have to do more than that in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And silver prices were also in negative territory today, but it did pair the decline overall. We saw a significant spike higher in palladium prices last week in response to mines shutting down. And that, I think, further emphasized that this is still a supply inelasticity market. It will definitely require much greater development of additional nickel production, and also the take-up of more electric vehicles to puncture this trend overall. This was a very emphatic upward dynamic, and it has helped to reassert demand dominance. And as a result, it has taken a lump out of the argument for platinum. So platinum prices were off their lows in here today, and it continues to trend higher in a reasonable manner. We may have to wait a while before it really moves to a clear position of outperformance relative to palladium. Now, when we then think about the oil price, well, it pulled back last week, and it was a little weaker in here today. It's still steadying from the lows earlier in March, but we are now well above the $60 area for Brent crude. So we're in the point where we would definitely need to see evidence of demand really coming back in emphatic fashion to support levels much above the $80 area. In other words, a lot of the good news has already been priced in. Then, when we turn our attention to what's going on in Asia, well, the Nifty index has been resurgent over the course of the last year, and it bounced on Friday from the region of its recent lows, and it was at least holding on to most of that move in here right now. Then the Bombay Banks Index, it should benefit from the continued willingness of the government to support the economy and all of that additional fiscal spending. But it is currently in a process of consolidation, and ideally it will hold the 500 point level and allow that 200-day moving average to catch up again. Historically, banks have led in India, so the performance of the banking sector certainly needs to be to considered. Now, there is certainly also this troubling news about the continued spread of the coronavirus and the fact that India has a large population and will probably take quite a bit of time to inoculate anybody who needs inoculation against the coronavirus. It's a challenge to get it all under control, even if they do have a very young population and are on average less affected. Then, when we think about the Brazilian market, well, the Brazilian real has steadied back towards the region of the trend mean. It continues to hold support around the 6 area, but Brazil has its number of coronavirus cases leaping higher at present, and they have gone through health ministers one after another due to the stress of trying to deal with it with an under-resourced healthcare system and the pressure of an environment which has been rather haphazard in dealing with it. Now, the Bovespa index is still steadying in the region of the trend mean. And Brazil is somewhere that will eventually benefit from continued demand for resources. So the LME Metals Index has clearly broken the base formation. And if we can just go back and look at what this has done over the big secular bull market in commodities up from the lows in 2001, it was spectacular on the upside. This looks a lot different from what oil looks like. We're not all that far away from the highs put in the period between 2007 and 2011. It's put in a long base formation. There is the clear scope that if the LME Metals Index can break above 4,500, well, then we will have confirmation that it's the beginning of a new secular bull market. Just contrast that with what oil prices look like over the course of the last 20 years. We obviously also had this spectacular advance in the early parts of the 2000s through up to the peak in 2012. But we're still way below where prices were then. In fact, prices today are less than half of where the peak values were. And there is just no shortage of oil. And the supply inelasticity that we have right now is artificial in nature. And there are lots of competition to try and curtail additional supply. So that may eventually contribute to higher prices, but it's higher prices by choice rather than necessity. And that's just not something that a secular bull market is based upon. A secular bull market means supply inelasticity that you can't do anything about without massive investment. And we're just not there with oil prices right now. On the other hand, when we think about the demand profile and growth for copper, then there is obviously the potential that we're going to have to spend a great deal of money in supporting investment in additional new infrastructure. And copper prices are right in the region of their all-time peaks. So we've had a little consolidation. And now the question is, how much consolidation will we get before it pushes on to new high ground? Because there is the clear scope that we are going to see a great deal of investment in renewable energy. And a good part of the reason for that is geopolitical in nature. The USA is energy independent. Europe and China are not. And they have got not just an environmental or social aspect to this determination, but a geopolitical imperative to also become energy independent. Well, they don't have the oil resources that the USA does, and therefore they need to come up with something else. And their answer, to a greater or lesser extent, is solar sector, the wind sectors, hydrogen, and nuclear. The solar ETF has rebounded from the region of the trend mean, and considering the size of the pullback, the size of the advance, I think a process of ranging in order to build support before the next significant move on the upside can be sustained is quite likely. And we're still at a fraction of where the enthusiasm for renewables was when oil prices were double where they are right now. So there is certainly potential for additional upside, but probably some consolidation first. Then when we think about the uranium price, the Global X Uranium ETF, it's really loaded more with the kinds of companies that benefit from reactor construction. And it has clearly broken its sequence of lower rally highs. So there's certainly potential here that we're going to see additional interest in uranium, particularly from China, and again, as part of that geopolitical imperative. One of the biggest, I think, arguments against uranium that I've most often heard is its cost. But the cost of uranium in terms of planning and environmental concerns is also political in nature. The number of roadblocks that have been put up to prevent additional new reactors being built turns into a very costly endeavor. And if governments and countries wanted to build more uranium power stations, they could. But they are putting additional planning roadblocks in place to ensure that that just doesn't happen. And that's why the hope for the sector is going to remain that China will continue to advance. Of course, Japan has been one of the biggest builders of nuclear reactors historically, and they've pretty much stopped doing it. Interestingly, the Nikkei was in negative territory today, so we're seeing some consolidation in the region of the 30,000 level, and that will at least help to unwind the short-term overbought condition, but this continues to look like a bull market overall, and the banking sector continues to benefit from the potential that we are looking at a global reflation, which may in fact have some inflation in it. Of course, this question about inflation is in many respects academic, because central banks have been planning and attempting to foment inflation for years and failed. And people have been worrying about the return of inflation for years and have been wrong. That doesn't mean that we haven't had some inflation. There's been lots of cost inflation, particularly for services. There have been bouts of commodity inflation, and certainly costs of living have increased. That is more a reflection of the devaluation of currencies and their purchasing power in real time. But inflation and rising prices and the mindset and the change that that would have, where people would be buying in bulk and buying to preserve current purchasing power for fear that they will lose that purchasing power later That's something we haven't really seen yet. And it might be a while before that transpires because there's still a large number of people who are unemployed. I do think that we're going to see a much quicker recovery than is currently being anticipated. Certainly, as I've traveled around and everyone I've talked to, is that any time the restrictions are lifted, people surge out into social activity. I've certainly seen that on my trip to Texas in February, and it'll be interesting to go there again tomorrow and to see just how many people are in fact wearing masks now that the state order to enforce it has been lifted. When we think about Japan, there's probably no country will benefit from a return of inflation more. And that is certainly one of the reasons why I think investors are becoming increasingly interested in it. Then we can think about China. The entire argument for being bullish about China is that they can continue to enhance productivity growth. And of course, keeping inflation under lids is certainly going to be an important factor there. The CSI 300 has at least bounced from the region of the trend mean. And then when we think about the more speculative portion of the market and the new digital champions in the ChinaX index, well, it's right also in the region of the trend mean, but it has pulled back into the underlying range. So if there were a midpoint danger line stop, it would have been triggered. Now the question is whether it can rebound and push back above that trend mean to confirm a return to demand dominance. If we're thinking about reflation and the determination of every country to get their economies back online, that should be beneficial for all commodity producers. The ASX 200 continues to consolidate right in the region of the peaks from early 2020. And then we can think about Canada, which has had the Keystone Pipeline cancelled again, but the stock market is at new highs and now pausing around the 19,000 level. So clearly, there's potential here for some pause and consolidation as well. Well, as we then think about what's likely, well, I think eventually we're going to see some pause and consolidation in the downtrend for yields. I think it's inevitable that the Federal Reserve is going to have to intervene eventually. But if the market is willing to take them at their word and we see an additional push downwards in the yield, they'll be under less pressure to do so. And that would certainly act as a tailwind for the Nasdaq in particular in growth. So that was why I closed my Nasdaq short, because I was anticipating that yields would continue higher, but I'm less convinced of that in here today. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.